Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, welcome back. Another busy week for Wall Street, the Fed, and central banks, while, of course, geopolitical developments are as head-spinning as they have been for a while. So today we will try to stay the course and make some sense of it all. And I do hear, by the way, from some of our listeners that the sense of sanity or clarity is what they're really looking forward to in our podcast. So with that, Burkhard, welcome back. Thank you for joining us this week.
Thank you, Dan. So why don't we start with the Fed and maybe other central banks around the world, as lots of stuff is happening just today and this week. You know, one of the important, one of my most cherished principles that I've been explaining to students or young career starters many times is never be embarrassed to admit that you don't know. I think that worked very well for Fed President Jerome Powell yesterday. He repeatedly told journalists that he knows no more than they do about what's going to happen to U.S. trade policy or what effect it'll have on the economy. He said the right thing by being as upfront as he was. He used the word uncertainty 16 times. I do sympathize with Jerome Powell. So let's try and cut through the noise here. Three things, I think, about the Fed, Powell, and bond markets are interesting. Number one, Powell's speech, as we now know, didn't keep stocks from recovering. I think investors are concluding that while the Trump put may be kaput for now, the Fed put is quietly coming back. Because in times of uncertainty, the old adage, do no harm, is the highest priority for old-fashioned central bankers like Jerome Powell certainly is. And look, that's a big thought. He also mentioned that last time tariffs caused inflation in 2016, it turned out to be transitory. Thank you very much. So market expectations for the Fed funds rates have shifted substantially lower, and that's helpful. Two, in global bond markets, the center still holds. While it seems U.S. bond vigilantes have offered their seats to the stock vigilantes this year, the rise of long Japanese yields to 1.5%, the highest in 16 years, would you have thought so, is framed by BOJ President Ueda as a virtuous circle. Higher wages, he points out, will fuel consumption and allow the economy to weather higher rates. Meanwhile, Germany's spectacular new spending targets this week for defense and infrastructure are signs of a new fiscal dawn, and yet bond markets are okay with that. While Germany's long yields did grind higher to 3%, that's the highest for 10 years, that is not slowing the rotation to German or European stocks. The next door in Switzerland, where I live, the Swiss National Bank this morning lowered its central bank rate to 25 basis points. Who would have thought so? While the Swedish and the English central banks kept rates unchanged, so again, in bond markets, at least the center still holds. Third thing to note, I think, about bond markets is everything is connected to everything. Hopes for lower U.S. long yields are clearly curtailed by the rise in German and Japanese yields. It's a new normal, and it does create yield opportunities elsewhere where none existed in the past.
Well, this is very interesting, Burkhard, if I'm interpreting this all correctly. You're saying that while the center still holds, we're somehow in a tipsy-topsy world where the order of the past few years no longer holds?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is, as we discussed before, all connected to this big theme of 2025, the Great Rotation. You know, it reminds me of Dorothy in the 1939 movie, The Wizard of Oz. Haven't we all watched that or read that sometime in our childhood? Remember how she says to her dog, Toto, "Toto, I have a feeling that we're not in Kansas anymore." It's exactly like that today. We are entering a new world. 2025, I think, is history in the making. And that's why it's easy to feel dizzy. But investors can stay ahead by thinking about the first and second and third order effects that are driving earnings and interest rates. That's it. That's how, I think, you take advantage of the new world order. So let me just reiterate three key views here, which I've mentioned before. Number one, go global. That's a big, there's a really big investor rotation favoring Asia, China, and Europe. That, of course, it ain't easy. Don't over-concentrate, diversify. The second takeaway is invest into the new global energy and security order. Bear in mind the two are joined at the hip and the shoulder. They're really two sides of the same coin. Number three, if you're dizzy, like I sometimes get, buy gold or Swiss francs. They give you peace of mind. That's it.
Well, Burkhard, this is very helpful food for thought as we consider this new normal. I did note that in your latest weekly Viewpoints letter that you did dedicate a long paragraph to India, though you haven't mentioned India in our conversation yet today. So can you take a few moments for our listeners, explain why India?
Sure, and thank you, and sorry for I forgot to mention amazing India. But I absolutely do think that investors should take a serious look at Indian markets, especially financials and consumer stocks, because they rise with the economy and the market. And the risk return is really attractive and the diversification potential is great. So here's why. Three reasons. Number one, India offers investors structural long-term growth. It's driven by good demographics. This is the only large economy that'll offer high single-digit growth in the order of 6-7% for the next 3 to 5 years. And unlike China, which is an export nation, India is mostly a domestic market. 70% of India's growth comes from domestic demand. The rest is infrastructure construction and a few exports, but mostly services, not goods. That's helpful because most U.S. tariffs target goods, not services, which is where India is strong. The second reason is India is geopolitically really well positioned. Unlike China, President Modi has forged good ties with governments around the world. The third aspect I'd make is Modinomics work. You may like him or not, but President Modi has dramatically improved infrastructure, regulations, and institutions in India. And then the other thing that I think matters to an investor is why now? And again, I would forward three reasons for considering India now. For one, it is modestly valued. It's just gone through a 15% correction. Now, the market trades really at a long-term average. Secondly, Indian companies, by our reckoning, should grow their earnings per share by around 15% for the next fiscal year 26. And we think that can be continued as the economy chums along nicely. Third, just to back this up with some interesting history, India and Taiwan have actually been Asia's best performing markets since the great financial crisis. India's Nifty 50 benchmark actually had positive returns for each of the last 8 years. And unlike Taiwan, India, of course, is geopolitically in a much better position or a much less vulnerable position as Taiwan is. So as businesses reshore from China, for many, India is their first port of call, and thus investors should take a serious look at this market.
Well, very compelling there, Burkhard, and as always, a very interesting and insightful tour around the world. Surely the big rotation is a big theme with more to come. So with that, do look forward to our conversations ahead. Though, Burkhard, as always, thank you for dropping by and for spending some time today with our listeners and clients here on the Viewpoints podcast.
Likewise, Dan. It's always a great pleasure to connect to you. Thank you for having me and have a great rest of the day. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.